Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. So, ladies, and I'll mention who the other lady is in a second. I just want to apologize for being late on the Skype cast today because I was busy taking like 8,419 photos of my cats snuggling together.
Oh, are they snuggling with the kitten?
They are. They're all bonded already. It's so cute. And it makes me super happy. So whenever I see them doing it, I'm like, oh my God, it's the cutest thing ever. But yeah, anyway, so... Welcome, Stephanie Gaudreau of Stupid Easy Paleo.
Hey.
Hello. Well, I guess welcome back. You're becoming a regular. So
I love talking to you ladies, so I hope I get to come back again at some point.
Of course.
It's a date. I don't know when it's for, but yes.
Definitely. We already want you back, and we're not even finished with this show. So, Steph, we made dinner out of your... newly released cookbook just tonight, and I had one of your burgers for lunch, although I didn't stack it the way you did in the book. I just put it over greens, but we are eating out of the Performance Paleo cookbook today. It's super exciting.
I saw that. That looked like the perfect combination. I mean, it just looks so delicious, and now I'm super hungry because I saw that picture right before I got on. So you're inspiring me to make something delicious for dinner.
The good news about both those recipes is that they're super simple, so it won't be a big deal if you make them for dinner.
Yeah. What do you like?
Sarah?
Yes, ma'am?
Long time no chat, eh?
Okay, so but here's the thing.
You see what I did there? I just said A.
You did. You did. I'm proud of you. 6 hours in Canada was enough. It's been, what, like... not even 48 hours. And yeah. Because of how much I have slept since we got back, it feels like it has to be at least like 5 days because I have been a napping machine to make up for all of the very, very, very long travel days. But we had fun. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
What great cities we just went to.
I feel like all of the lessons that we needed to learn from touring together the first time all came together to put like a final perfect cherry on the tour Sunday for me this weekend that just happened. Like, I feel like it just kept getting better. Like, I really like Nashville. You didn't get to stay in Nashville as long as I did, but Caitlin from Grass-Fed Girl hosted us, and it's super nice to go to a city and have someone kind of drive you around and have you in their home and make broth for you. Like, that's exactly how you want a tour stop to be. And the crowd at Nashville was super enthusiastic and fun, and there were people that had driven, you know, hours, even from, I think, someone from Georgia.
Someone from Atlanta had come.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, they went basically the same distance I did. I was like, really? I'm sure I'll do something in Atlanta again soon. But that was, yeah, it was really cool.
And then that was, so that the weather was fine there, because obviously, you know, it's Tennessee. But then we got into Minneapolis, and it was like, right after bad weather and right before bad weather. Like, there was literally a 24-hour window for us to not have bad weather.
Yeah, it was like in between the snow and the ridiculous cold.
Yeah, so that was super nice. And I would say, dear Portland, as much as we love you, the Minneapolis crowd may have been as big, if not bigger, than our biggest previous stop, which was Portland, which was kind of a shocker for us. Like, I emailed Monica the day before for Tennessee, and I was like, hey, can you give us the RSVP numbers for the next three stops? And she texted me back, and she was like, you know, whatever, whatever. And then it was like Minneapolis 354. I was with Sarah, and I was like, oh, we're my, like, gosh.
We need to call the store right now and let them know what's about to happen.
It's really awesomely insane. And what I
and
loved.
A great crowd, too. Yeah. Like, super enthusiastic, laughing at our stupid jokes.
Totally.
Like,
we threw exo bars at them.
I may or may not have pelted a woman in the head with an exo bar. I hugged her to apologize. I felt really bad about it. But yeah, just like super, super fun group. And like, when you think about paleo meccas in the United States, like, people think about Austin, they think about Portland, they think about Denver. Like, they need to start adding Minneapolis to that list, because that was an enthusiastic, tight-knit crowd. And like, Minneapolis itself had like lots of great like paleo amenities too. So it was kind of like you think about how great Portland is to have paleo friendly restaurants. Well, Minneapolis has them too. So it was
totally,
it was such a neat experience. And I think, yeah, I don't want to pick favorites, but it was awesome.
I agree. And the crowd in Minneapolis actually reminded me of the crowd in Phoenix, because not only were they like super jazzed, but they'd never had any paleo people come there before. And so they were just like super excited. So, but the only thing bad about Minneapolis was that we had to get up at 4 a.m. that morning, like the following morning, and head out to Toronto, Canada. My first time going through customs and using my passport. And that was a pretty intense travel day from,
yeah,
you know, getting up so early and then having like the elongated process of going through customs and immigration. And then we were only actually physically in Toronto for 6 hours. And then again, getting to the airport, I had kind of an airport disaster on the way out because I can't read.
It was a Terminal 1, Terminal 3 mishap. There's people all over the world who understand. Anyone who lives in a big enough city to have multiple terminals, they understand that mishap where you go, oh, I thought I was flying out of Terminal 1. Oh, no, it's Terminal 3. Oh, no, wait, it is Terminal 1.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that wouldn't have necessarily been a problem if we hadn't kind of been a little later to the airport than we had intended, because I was busy being a bully to the bouncer at Costco.
I was gonna.
So why don't you retell that story? And Steph, I think you'll get a kick out of this.
So let me tell the story. So, okay. So we land in Toronto. We have coffee with my family. We grab a really quick bite to eat. We do our signing. And then it's like time to head to the airport. But real life paleo is in Costco, Canada. And this is a big deal. And this is Stacy's dream. And there happens to be a Costco on the way to the airport. So Peter, a super, super nice man that we met, studying to become a naturopathic doctor, offers us a ride, because Canadians are awesome and they offer people rides places. And he totally doesn't mind taking us to Costco first. So we get to Costco. It's like 20 after 5. We're thinking like, this is great. We walk up to the entrance and it's closed. So they had closed at 5, but they let anyone who arrives before 5 is allowed to shop. So there's tons of people still shopping, but they're not letting anybody else in. And these women who, you know, whose like job is to check people's receipts on the way out and make sure that, you know, jerks like us don't walk in, are like, you know, saying no, like, I'm sorry, ma'am, like, we can't let you in, the store's closed. And Stacey's like, I'm an author, my book's here, I'm only in town for today. Like, I just really want to see my books in Costco. Can I speak with a manager? And they're like, the manager's busy. We can't, like, they're just doing their job. And so Stacey's like, we can see the customer service desk is like 20 feet away. And Stacey's like, I'd like to, can I just speak with a manager? All I want to do is see my books. People are still in the store. Can I please just speak to a manager? And they're like, no, absolutely not. And Stacey's like, she looks at these two women, and I think Stacey, this is my reading of Stacey's facial expression.
Your reading was right.
I could take you. You can't stop me. And she just walks past the, to the customer service desk, finds the manager. And the manager's like, absolutely. Your friends can come in. That's totally fine. So we follow Stacy in and find, you know, it's like every Costco is laid out exactly the same as every other Costco. So it's super easy to go find the books. And then we find Real Life Paleo is the only paleo cookbook in the entire stack of books in this Costco.
Oh.
I don't know if that's the case in all Costco Canada's or if it's just, if it was just the Etobicoke Costco, but, and Stacy, I'm like, she's handing me her phone. I've got my phone ready. And she just starts to cry. Like, it's like the most overwhelming and like most beautiful thing to witness. Like, what a privilege to witness such a momentous moment in someone's life. It's like seriously like watching your friend give birth. Like, it's that much of a privilege. Like, you did not father that child. You don't have any right to be there. And yet you get to witness that amazing like moment. And that was what it was like for me. And I'm sorry that Matt missed it. I took about 5,000 pictures and sort of like belatedly realized that I should have been taking like video with one phone, pictures with the other, but it like the moment had passed. And then this like shopper came by and was like, hey, sign copies. And I just start like selling her Real Life Paleo while Stacy's like signing all the books and stacks. So if you live in Toronto and you missed us, there are signed copies of Real Life Paleo in the Etobicoke Costco. And there are signed copies of all of our books at the Babler Indigo.
As like well as the Edina, Minnesota.
The Edina, Barnes & Noble. There's signed copies of all of our books there.
And the Cool Springs in Nashville, Tennessee.
And there's signed copies of my books and Mediterranean Paleo in the Costco in Cool Springs, Cool Springs, Tennessee, Nashville suburb.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. You totally like read me correctly. I was trying so hard to be polite because you'd had like a big conversation with me about how important being polite in Canada was. And I was freakishly polite. Like, I have never been that polite in my life.
Oh my gosh. You were chipper. Like, I don't know if people listening to this podcast would normally think of chipper in like the top 10 adjectives to describe Stacy.
Nope.
But you were chipper.
Yep.
And you were huggy. You hugged people.
They asked. It was fine.
They asked, and you gave the real hugs back. And then when we discussed what the difference was between a real hug and a not real hug.
Yeah.
Right. Real hug, you keep smiling even when your arms are around the other person. Okay. That's the difference. And you said like polite words. It was you started to say it was awesome. I think you almost started spelling color with a U. we almost got there. Another 2 hours we would have been there.
I know. So the thing about this Costco thing is I was like, I was trying so hard to be polite, and then I was just like, I am not taking no for an answer. Like, anybody who knows me knows that like rules don't apply. So this lady was like, no, you can't go in. And I was like, yeah, I can. Like, you're not going to stop me. And then, like you said, the manager was super nice and she rolled her eyes when I was like, the manager says it's fine, come on in. But she was doing her job. Anyway, so it was...
She was doing her job. The poor woman, we just really harassed her and made her night horrible. But it was a pretty beautiful moment, so...
It was awesome. And for me, it's probably the last time I'll do anything like that. Kind of like, you know, when you give birth and it's your last child and you kind of like savor pregnancy, and then you know, when your child weans, you're like, oh, that was it, I'll never do that again. I'm kind of having that like emotional experience with the book tour, because there might be some like scattered random events here and there, but like that's it for us. We know that we're not going to write any more paleo cookbooks, at least for a very long time, while our kids are in school. And so It was a wonderful way to end the tour. Like, I'm so glad that after Portland and Seattle, the last trip, I was just really physically exhausted. Like, it was just really hard on me to enjoy those last couple cities, even though they were amazing, because I was just so physically exhausted. So to kind of like come back and have a great, you know, triple event weekend and be able to like feel like, okay, I've put it out there and it's been wonderful, and I can kind of rest easy that, you know, it ended on a high note and felt really good. So I can't thank everyone enough who came out, and we had like just spectacular attendees. So nice. Love hearing the success stories and people giving us amazing gifts and homemade food. And, you know, just we have the most heartfelt, amazing people in this community, and it's wonderful to witness. And Sarah and I have talked about, we want to talk a little bit maybe next week on the podcast, kind of give our spiel that we give everyone at these events. We can give it to you guys so that if you didn't get to attend one, maybe you can still hear the speech that we give everyone. So that's our plan for next week. But this week, Steph is here. Steph is kind of an expert in a lot of different things, but I think of her as an expert in kind of understanding the body's needs as it relates to physical exercise and how to nourish and fuel your body for that. Not that she's not intelligent on a bunch of different things, but one of my favorite posts, I think we talked about it last time, was calling out gelatin as not necessarily the best protein supplement, right? Like it's great for a number of things, but to think of it as a protein that you can
like that would be the only protein at your meal,
right?
And getting a complete protein out of it, which you would not be,
right?
Because it's pretty, I mean, it is a complete protein technically, but it's pretty imbalanced in its amino acid profile.
So I thought, when I read that post that Steph did on gelatin, being a person who is big on gelatin, but not for that reason, it was kind of groundbreaking for me to be able to have something to point to people to. Like, well, yes, gelatin is wonderful for X, Y, and Z, but let's not use it as an alternative to meat. And there's just awesome stuff like that Steph's puts out. So we thought it'd be fun to talk today specifically about some of that kind of stuff. In addition, because Stephanie's brand new cookbook, the Performance Paleo Cookbook, is out. And like I said, I made two things out of it today. We made the mocha slow cooked pot roast, I think it's called, in our Instapot for brunch on Christmas morning. And that was amazing. So I've never actually put coffee on meat before because we usually have meat in the evenings and I don't want the caffeine. So making it for brunch was perfect. And everybody at the Christmas brunch loved it. Like my family, there was no leftovers. So I love being able to make recipes with people before we talk to them about their cookbooks. So all three of the recipes that we made so far have been amazing, and I love the way that you've kind of laid out the book. Do you want to maybe introduce yourself to people who might not have heard your podcast before and talk a little about what you did with the cookbook?
Sure. So I wrote the Performance Paleo Cookbook as a resource for people to like get into the kitchen with, because a lot of the times, you know, whether it's like blog posts or podcasts or ebooks, like a lot of times we talk about kind of the theory behind nutrition, and in this case, nutrition for athletes, and like, oh, you know, this many grams of protein and this many grams of carbs, and think about how much fat you're getting. But when we get into the kitchen, it's like we are dealing with real food, right? So how do we transition from the ideas behind, like, how do we fuel as people who are interested in performance to really making the food and actually doing that part? And so I wanted to give people a resource that they could use to make the food. And so that was really my motivation behind doing the cookbook. And then the way I structured it was a little bit different than maybe a normal cookbook, in that it's not just like breakfast, lunches, and dinners. It's, you know, I listened to the feedback that my audience and my readers were giving me. And I asked a lot of questions like, you know, what are you guys really stuck on? What do you want to know about? And what can I help answer for you? And a lot of people were, you know, super confused still about like pre-workout versus post-workout, or, you know, if I work out first thing in the morning, when should I eat? You know, that sort of thing. And so the way I've structured the book is to try to address some of that. So I have a section in the beginning of the book that talks about, you know, how you can schedule your day around when your workout's going to be and what would your meals possibly look like. So different combinations, you know, for people that work out first thing in the morning before you eat breakfast, or you work out at lunchtime because you have a lunch break and you take advantage of that, or you work out before dinner, or you have to work out after dinner. So I tried to structure that so that people would have some options. And then I decided at the beginning of the book, like the recipes, I wanted to give folks ideas for pre-workout food and post-workout food. Because, you know, as people in the paleo community, or we're kind of taking a more health-focused view on performance, like not everybody wants to drink protein powder. Not everybody wants to drink a supplement or take something that's not really food. You know, like just kind of protein bars that you grab at the store and that sort of thing. So I wanted to give people different options for grabbing something quick before their workout, or having something that they bring to the gym with them for post-workout that would really kind of fit with these recommendations that people are always tossing around. And then the rest of the book is kind of like mix and match. So proteins, carb-dense veggies and sides and vegetables and sauces, and then 50 different combinations of how people can put those together and make a meal. Because some people need more guidance and they're like, well, I'm not really sure what would go with this dish. You know, can you give me kind of a meal plan? So that was my way of kind of acquiescing to people that want meal plans, because the thought of it makes me want to cringe. It's just not something that's in my wheelhouse to put together. And I feel weird telling people like what they should eat, what day at what time, but that was my way of kind of giving a nod to folks who wanted a meal plan, was to take the recipes and put them together in combinations that would work as complete meals. So yeah, that's the book.
It's beautiful. And I think one of my like favorite, like not the recipe part, but the information part of it, is the sort of schedule of not like strict times, but like, if this is the structure of your day, if you're going to work out before, you know, first thing in the morning, if you prefer to work out fasted versus if you prefer to work out not fasted, here's what your day looks like in terms of your meals and your workout and your, you know, post-workout or pre-workout, you know, snack, and how you're going to put that together. Because I think it's one of those things, there's so much conflicting information out there about whether or not, you know, what a post-workout meal should look like, what a pre-workout, you know, should it be a shake? Like there's so many different things out there that people are told to do. And I think it can be really hard for people coming into paleo from that fitness perspective of, the whey protein, you know, and electrolytes. And, you know, there's so much junky pre and post-workout mm-hmm. nutrition that's sort of readily available, and to come into paleo and then not have those things, but have this, you know, knowing that you're training hard enough that those things are really going to help with recovery and building strength and all of those things, trying to find where the real food options are can be really, really tricky. And you've basically like solved that problem for people.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we talk a lot about what our best recommendations are for folks. And I think, like you said, a lot of people don't really know where to start. So my goal is to give people a place to start, try these things out. And, you know, like there, you may decide that you're going to tweak things. Like maybe you decide you're going to try completely fasted training in the morning, and then your Metcons feel okay, but whenever you're working on strength training, you feel completely zapped. You know, and you're like, well, maybe I want to try playing around with like a semi-fasted training or something light that's not going to weigh me down, but yet takes the hunger off, you know, takes the edge away. So, you know, just to give people a starting point and say, maybe I'll try this, and then perhaps later on I'm going to tweak it. Or what if I change my sport, right? And I need to like think about how the fueling requirements could be different, or what, you know, I may need to eat more carbohydrate or less carbohydrate. So it's, you know, I really wanted to give people a platform to start with. Like you said, that's really based around real food, and it gives people options for that. Instead of like, I was talking about things like No Explode and like these crazy drinks that come in giant buckets, you know, you get from the GNC store or whatever, and you're just like, what is in that? And I think it's great to give people an option to turn away from those sorts of things, or to at least explore how they can just eat real food and keep it simple, but still achieve the goals that they have for performance.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's nice about it too is that one of the things that I'm appreciating a lot about the community lately is not so much a focus on dogma and perfectionism. And I think that it's really nice how you did that in the Performance Paleo Cookbook, where it's like you know, there are places where you talk about protein powders and those kinds of things that people are interested in, it as well as offering alternatives, so that people can either make that choice, or they can do some of each, or they can figure out how to make the best choices in their life without necessarily needing to feel like, you know, if they're in a hurry and they need some protein post-workout, that, you know, a smoothie or whatever isn't going to be the worst thing that ever happens to them.
Yeah, I think it's hard. You know, folks want to turn to better, more nutrient dense sources of nutrition and still perform at their best. And I think there's this really big stigma in the performance community and, you know, the sports community that, like, you have to do all kinds of crazy supplements and, like, you know, pills, powders, and potions, I call it. Like, you have to do all these crazy pills, powders, and potions to be successful as an athlete. And I take like a huge exception to that. And however, you know, on the other hand, athletes demand a lot of their bodies. They, even people who might not call themselves athletes, right? So one of the reasons why we didn't put the word athlete in the title was because I think a lot of people don't self-identify as an athlete, because maybe you go to CrossFit 5 or 6 days a week and you are trying your hardest, like you are training really hard, and you're putting your body through a lot, but maybe you never enter a competition, right? And you're like, well, I'm not an athlete. Like, I don't actually compete against other people, or I don't enter into formal competitions, or I don't go to races, or I don't go to, you know, whatever events that might signify to people that they're doing an athletic pursuit. So we didn't want to put athlete in there to turn people off, but recognizing that we're like people that train hard, whether you enter into formal competitions or you don't, like we're putting a huge demand on our bodies. Like, it's a physical stress. It's a psychological stress. We get depleted a lot more than if we were sedentary, and we, you know, recovery is really important. So recognizing that, there are certain concessions that people might make, even if they have a paleo-based nutrition, right? Like, they follow a general paleo template in their nutrition, but they're like, hey, I need more carbohydrate than somebody who's sedentary. Or I'm going to, you know, people, the example that comes into my mind are CrossFit coaches, right? They're usually coaching multiple classes a day. They're doing their own workout, and then they have a class to come that comes in right away. And there's no time to go home and cook a meal. So a person like that might do a protein powder, or they might do something like white rice because it's convenient and fast. And I get really kind of upset when people judge other folks and say, like, well, you're not paleo because you use protein powder. And it's like, well, hold on. Like, let's reserve the judgment. Let's understand the things that athlete is doing and the enormous amount of stress that they're putting their bodies under, and the training volume and the training frequency. And like, for somebody like that, it might make sense. For somebody who's a more recreational type of athlete, or they're just, you know, they want to be healthy, happy, and harder to kill, which is, you know, the way I kind of describe it, like, maybe protein powder isn't necessary for them because they can go home and make a quick post-workout meal for themselves. Or, you know, they know that a particular like whey protein doesn't sit well with me, so I'm going to go for something that's more whole food based instead of something that's a shake. So I think there's a lot of latitude there, but like you said, there's a lot of dogma that I think keeps performance-minded people from turning to paleo because they think, well, if I eat this, then I'm not paleo, so why even bother? And I think we're missing a huge subset of the population that could see better performance or just improved health overall if they did paleo with I call it smart modifications for athletes. Like, there has to be some wiggle room there, right? Like, it can't all be just dogma. Or, you know, it's like we're kind of missing the point with spreading this message toward a larger portion of the community.
Totally. The other thing that I would just want to say about the book is that I had no idea that I could make lotus chips, and I'm really excited to do that. Sarah, did you see that that recipe was in there?
I saw the lotus chips. So I have made lotus fries before, but it never occurred to me to go that, like, slice them thinner and go that to that. And then now I'm like, yeah.
They're gorgeous, and I would have never known that they were a dense carbohydrate. Like, it's just not a food that I think of. So I'm excited to look for it the next time I go to the Asian market.
I can't see them. I don't see them very often. Like, they'll sort of come in seasonally for like a week or two. My local Whole Foods does pretty well with seasonal weird stuff like lotus root. Yep, I want that.
Yeah, I wanted to. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say your photography is beautiful too, by the way. Like,
thank you. I was going to say that, you know, sometimes cookbooks come out and they have like all sorts of crazy, like super hard to find ingredients. And I think that like both of your cookbooks do a really good job of presenting food that's really accessible. But one of the things that I hear a lot from people is they're like, I'm so bored of sweet potatoes. If I have to eat another sweet potato, I'll die. Like they want variety. So I really tried to present some super like basic, easy to find food, but I also slipped some like interesting kind of like, maybe you've seen this in the store and you have no idea what it is, but it's actually
a great source of garlic. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Black garlic is good. Sarah, you would love it.
Clearly I will be looking for it.
Trader but Joe's has I didn't. It.
Okay, well then there you go. I know where to find it. 5 minutes down the road.
Yeah,
but so, I had no idea.
Yeah, so I think I wanted to. One of my missions in this book was to like present a whole bunch of food that was super accessible, but also pitch some new ideas out there for people. Like, I think a lot of people still haven't discovered plantains, which you ladies both have. And I put some stuff with plantains in there. And I mean, that's stuff that's becoming a lot more readily available at pretty much any market. Like, you can go to Sprouts and get it, or, you know, look at your local, whatever local market you go to. But I really wanted to give people some options in case they were suffering from the like sweet potato overload syndrome and they didn't ever want another sweet potato ever again. So yeah, I tried to just mix it up a little bit.
I think you succeeded.
Definitely.
So that's one thing that actually would be kind of interesting to talk about, because this is a cookbook that really embraces starch, and you do have some rice in it and you do have white potatoes in it. And it's something that we're seeing in the community becoming embraced more and more, is this concept of safe starches, and I'm using air quotes again, even though nobody can see me. But it's still an idea that still has this like major backlash. So, you know, I think that all of us find if we post a recipe that includes these types of ingredients, mm-hmm. that you'll have, you know, these people commenting on it, but rice isn't paleo, or but white potatoes aren't paleo. Like, how can you eat that? Paleo is supposed to be low carb. And there's this, you know, it sort of depends on like where people get their information as they're coming into the community. But there's still this really, I think, large percentage of people who are under the misconception that a paleo diet is by definition a low carbohydrate diet, which of course it isn't. But I think that where safe starches become like, we can talk about it in terms of general health and women's health and where the sort of balance is, but it becomes something that's absolutely essential for performance and for athletics because of the increased demands on the glycogen stores for those people. So I'd love for you to kind of talk about, you know, your journey through the safe starch universe, and maybe maybe we can geek out a little bit.
As long as it's not like Interstellar, we can go on that journey through that universe.
Excellent.
Yeah. You know, when I first started paleo 5 years ago, there was nowhere near the volume of information and stuff available at the time. And the first book I actually read was Paleo Diet for Athletes by Dr. Cordain and Joe Friel. But I still walked away from that book thinking, okay, I need to like significantly cut back on carbohydrate. And I was at the time racing mountain bikes for, you know, long distances. We would go out and do training rides that were 6 hours, 8 hours, you know, both days on the weekend. Like there was a lot of training going on and then some during the week. So I was paleo at this time and I was still, you know, I was able to resolve some of the kind of nagging, annoying health issues I was having and feel a lot better about them, but I was still really, really low on carbs. And I don't know if I just like got away with it or what, but you know, I didn't luckily have significant lasting negative impact from that. Like, you know, I didn't have thyroid problems. I didn't have adrenal problems. So I don't know if I just was lucky or, you know, I had a lot built up in the bank to kind of take the impact of that. But when I started CrossFitting, it became a lot more obvious to me that I wasn't progressing as far as I thought I could because I wasn't really eating correctly. So even though I was doing paleo and I was doing pretty clean paleo, I wasn't eating enough carbohydrate. And when I started kind of like competitive CrossFit training, I sat down and talked to one of my coaches and like we had kind of this heart to heart, like, you know, you need to eat more carbohydrate and like eat more food in general. Cause I pretty much came from this mentality of like pretty much everybody our age who's like, you know, you have to diet and you have to cut back and you should be eating less and you should be restricting and you should be, you know, behaving yourself and like, you know, all these really kind of typical diet mentality things that do bleed over into paleo. And Stacey, I read your article yesterday, you know, talking about challenges and like how for some people it's not a great thing. And I think a lot of that, we need to address that, but that's a tangent. So
it's totally a tangent.
Totally a tangent. But yeah, I kind of had this like this mentality of like cutting back. And once I started to introduce more carbohydrate, especially, and then eat more protein was the other thing. I started to perform better. I started to recover better. And things were a lot better overall. So I definitely fell into the trap of like, you have to be super low carb. And that's one of the main reasons why I'm so passionate about this aspect of working with athletes. Because not only am I an athlete, but I see myself in a lot of people that I meet and a lot of the folks that I talk to that they're just like, man, I can't figure out why paleo just doesn't work for me if I CrossFit. And I'm like, well, what are you eating for carbs? And they're like, you know, they describe what they're eating. And I'm like, well, okay, like, let's try introducing some carbohydrate into your diet. So that's kind of like where I came from personally. And now I'm definitely, I have too, like started eating white potatoes and I'll eat the occasional white rice. It's not like my go-to all the time, but I've become a lot less strict about those things because those foods don't bother me in a negative way. I've tested that. I've done, you know, a couple Whole 30s and I pay attention to my body and how I feel if I eat those foods and they're not, you know, I tolerate them well. So I continue to eat them. And I think, yeah, there will be people who look at this book and there's one recipe with white rice. And there's like one or two recipes with white potatoes and they'll be like, this book isn't paleo because it has those ingredients. And again, like they're taking a super dogmatic point of view in saying that. And I understand like it can be confusing for people who are newcomers. And I really try to explain that in the book, like, hey, this is completely situational. It depends on who you are, what your goals are, what your health status is, and how you're going to modify things. But again, I think we'll cast a wider net and we'll get more people to really change their diet for the better if we're like, hey, you know what? You're okay with nightshades. You're not dealing with trying to radically shift your body composition. A white potato every once in a while is not going to kill you. you know, so I think we need to just have more discussions about stuff like that. And about the safe starches and that sort of thing. And realize that we can't just apply one template to everybody. You know, like,
so it's I find it fascinating, the idea that, especially with white potatoes, that they were sort of like crossed off this list in this like early version of the paleo diet, and that we stick to that dogma without really understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the arguments against white potatoes that are in the paleo diet, which is like the book that actually sort of said, you know, eat meat and seafood and eggs and vegetables and fruit and nuts and seeds, but don't eat potatoes, was pretty much like the only vegetable that was eliminated. And then it was like, if you have metabolic syndrome, here's some high sugar fruits to avoid. But the arguments for potatoes were the arguments against any nightshade. And if you're not sensitive to nightshades, there's no particular reason why potatoes are more or less problematic. And in fact, compared to something like tomatoes or chili peppers, they actually have far fewer glycoalkaloids, which are this mm-hmm. sort of immune stimulating compounds in nightshades that are like the culprits in potatoes that led them to be excluded compared to other nightshades. And they aren't a high glycemic, I mean, they're a moderate glycemic load food, like a lot of the other starches that you've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually, I mean, I don't consider them as nutrient dense as other roots and tubers. Like a sweet potato tends to have a lot more vitamins and minerals than a potato mm-hmm. does, but that doesn't mean they're like completely empty calories. When you compare them to, you know, something else that somebody else might be putting on their plate, like a white flour dinner roll.
Bowl of cereal, you know. Like,
right. Yeah. And it's one of those things that, you know, we get so stuck on these rules that we have to follow. And I think that it's one of the things that is really important in the paleo community now is to really educate people, not just on what the rules are, but on like what the reasons for them are, so that they can actually figure out if that rule is something that applies to them or not, if it's something that's actually going to be a good choice for them. Because I think that that's, you know, one of the places where I think it's the paleo diet's biggest strength, is that it's actually based in science. But it doesn't matter if it's based in science if you don't actually educate people about the science behind it. Like, you have to give people that toolbox to make the best choice for themselves. So I like totally interrupted you, but you just had me like stewing about this whole potato thing.
Yeah.
So, well, I don't eat them, but I think they're fine.
And you're totally like you hit the nail on the head. And I've said this so many times, is like, we need to just explain the why and the rationale. And there are still people who don't want to listen after you do that. But a majority of people are like, oh, I had no idea. Like, you know, you sit there and you explain it from a physiology point of view, you know, or from a psychological point of view, whatever that particular food is. And people are like, I totally get it. And it makes things so much easier to have a discussion, you know. And I sometimes give the example of my husband. He was paleo before I had ever heard of paleo and before I even knew him. So he's kind of like an OG of paleo. But he, when he switched to a paleo diet, his eczema got way worse. So he's had eczema his whole life. And before, he used to eat lots of, you know, processed food and like all things that are really low in histamines. And when he switched to a paleo diet, you know, he felt so much better overall, but his eczema got worse, because a lot of the foods that he was eating that are like embraced wholeheartedly in paleo, like things like sauerkraut and beef jerky and, you know, like in eggs and all sorts of stuff, avocado, stuff that I can't live without, actually are really high in histamine. And it took him a long time to figure out that he had a histamine intolerance. So, you know what I mean? Like, if he had just continued to eat these foods in perpetuity and never like step away from them because, you know, quote, they're paleo, air quotes, like, he would still be suffering from that. And now we, you know, we can manage it pretty well, but it's one of those things where you have to really see what works for you and pay attention to your body and know your goals and know your context. And that's what's going to set you up for success long-term in life. And I just wrote about this recently, but like a yes and no list is great for people to get started, because paleo can be such a nebulous concept to get your brain around when you're starting. But for most people, like, living strictly to a yes, no list forever is not possible. Like, you either run out of willpower, or you just completely fall off the wagon, or, you know, you're just like, screw this, this is too hard. And I think we want people to develop healthy habits for life, right? Like, that's what our goal is. And that's the stuff that's going to be, that you can stick to long term. You've got to inject some personal stuff in there.
I think that's an excellent segue to following that tangent we almost followed a few minutes ago. Because we almost followed the tangent, and it's a really good tangent to follow, which is the sustainability of really strict rules and things like paleo challenges. Stacey, do you want to kind of summarize your pretty darned epic post from yesterday?
Sure. Well, I think for me, especially, you know, Sarah, that post resonated, and I finally finished writing it and putting it out there because of the weekend we've had. I mean, you and I have had that conversation I don't know how many times. But
604.
Yeah, seriously. But it was interesting because I found that in each audience, I could, either from conversation or just in like seeing people nod in certain ways, I knew that a lot of people were in the audience actively on paleo challenges. And it would come up because we'd like give them an exo bar and they'd say, oh, I can't have it because it's not a whole 30 or it's not 21 day sugar detox, which there's nothing wrong with that. I want to make it clear that like those challenges can and have helped a lot of people. But, for Sarah and I, both personally and for the people that we talk to through the blog and, you know, social media and all that kind of stuff, there's a huge group of people that those sort of rules can bring about really the opposite intention of behavior. And I think, you know, the more rules there are, like Stephanie was describing, like it's paleo or it's not paleo, can be what people really desire, right? It's really easy to say, this is what I can eat and this is what I can't eat. And you can, you know, whether you have a healthy mind or an unhealthy mind about food, either way, a lot of people identify with creating rules and sticking with them. And I think it's a lot harder to kind of constantly be evaluating the things that make you feel good and the things that don't make you feel good. And for example, I had gas for like a 2-week period of time before Christmas and could not figure out what in the world was giving me gas. Turns out it was mineral water. Like I was drinking so much mineral water and feeling really great about it. And I was like thinking it was a million different things that I was eating that was giving me an upset stomach. And then I realized that it was the bubbles in the mineral water. Mineral water is perfectly paleo. Like it's totally healthy and it's full of nutrients and, you know, it's a great thing. But if it's giving me gas, then it's not good for me. So I had to remove mineral water from my own diet. It's not to say that it is or isn't paleo or it is or isn't on a challenge. It simply didn't work for me. And I think it's a lot harder to kind of evaluate, okay, what am I eating? What am I consuming that's giving me this negative feeling and then working within those parameters. And so, you know, what especially I wanted to write about was for the people that those challenges can be a negative thing are the people that have had a history of, you know, yo-yo dieting or emotional eating or disordered eating in general. And I think, you know, Sarah and I have talked about the idea of orthorexia as being something that we see a lot in the community. People justify, you know, these super clean, strict rule challenge type behavior in judgment of other people who don't have that type of behavior, which is orthorexia, with defining themselves as paleo. You know, I remember starting my paleo journey and being on paleo hacks like 5 years ago before it was like this thing. It was kind of like Reddit for paleo, but I didn't even know what Reddit was at the time. And seeing someone like blast someone else for a picture of their salad because there was red pepper on it, and the person being like, red pepper isn't paleo. And at the time, I didn't even know about AIP. And I just was like, remember going to Matt and being like, I can't figure this out. I don't know. It's paleo. It's not paleo. I'm never going to be successful. And it's that kind of like dogmatic, emotional, reactionary behavior that should be a cause for concern with people. Like, that's not normal. That's not loving yourself, respecting yourself, nourishing yourself. If you have emotions tied up in food at all, that's not a healthy behavior, period. And so I talked a little in depth about like my personal health experience and the triggers that I find for myself and the triggers that I've heard from other people about this kind of dogmatic, very strict approach, and how, you know, we as individuals really need to evaluate what works best for us and how people can maybe go about doing that so that they can figure out if a mineral water is in fact giving them gas. Anyway, yeah. Over soapboxed, maybe? I don't know.
Well, no, go ahead, Sarah.
No, go ahead. You go ahead, Steph.
I was going to say the way I described it recently was like we have on average 21 meals a week to make good choices. And we know that eating healthy overall, right, takes discipline. Like you need to have some amount of discipline if you're going to positively change your health status by changing the food that you're eating. Because if you're just going to go at it all, you know, half-hearted and only half the time you're making changes or you're barely making any changes, you're not going to see positive change in your health status. But I think often confuse discipline with perfection, especially in this community where it's like, well, you have to eat perfectly the entire time. Like you have to be exactly perfect. You have to eat by this perfect set of rules and this perfect yes and no list. And a lot of times people get wrapped up in that and they don't see the value in the fact that discipline and perfection are two different things. So that's kind of how I describe it and how I think about it is like, yeah, you need to have some discipline if you're going to make better choices and have better overall health, but perfection can be just as damaging.
I love that.
It's such better explanation.
It's not necessarily the way that I describe it so much as like my addition to that is that the idea behind a paleo diet is to be healthy for the rest of our lives. And what we want to do is make the best choices we can as often as we can for as long as we're alive. And I think that when you set something up with so many rules that it can't be sustainable anymore, you completely undermine what the whole point is, which is to be healthy forever. The point isn't to be healthy for a 21-day or a 30-day challenge. The point is to have the best health we can and live as long as we can. And so for most of us, I mean, that doesn't mean that some people don't thrive in those environments, but for most of us, that means finding some kind of balance. And that balance is something that is different for different people and it shifts, right? Like, so part of that balance is figuring out what is optimal for our bodies, for our own individual bodies, what our bodies just love. And that's where, you know, a paleo challenge or an elimination diet might be a really powerful tool to be able to figure that out. But so figuring out what's optimal for our bodies and then figuring out what our body tolerates. And that's where like careful reintroductions and monitoring symptoms and figuring out why that mineral water is giving you gas. That's where that's a really, really important, you know, tool to figure out what you can tolerate. So where, you know, where's the lines that you can't cross. And then what you do is you find somewhere in between those two extremes where you've got, you know, enough flexibility that you can actually keep doing that day after day forever. And then, you know, it shifts because sometimes there's a stressful event in your life and what your body tolerates is going to be different because stress impacts your immune system and your digestion. Sometimes you're on vacation and what you tolerate, you know, changes because you're on vacation and your stress is really low and you're getting lots of extra sunlight and you can tolerate foods that you couldn't tolerate before. Sometimes you'll have a goal that you'll want to reach. So you'll want to shift where you find balance to closer to optimal. You know, it can be something that's sort of like constantly changing, but the idea isn't, you know, that you are perfect for 30 days and then you can do whatever you want. The idea is to be healthy for as long as we can be. And you don't achieve that by just doing this for spurts. You achieve that by finding whatever is your particular recipe to make it sustainable for you and your body and your life. And I think that I think that when people get really on this rules, rules, rules bandwagon, it's disrespectful, right? It's not respecting the individual who can figure out for themselves what's best for them. And I think that it's something that we get within the community. There's areas of the community that are so overly focused on these rules and these challenges and this perfectionism. And I think it's to the detriment of the movement as a whole, because it's not sustainable. So it means that people coming in are basically being set up for failure, because they're coming in with this fixed set of rules and this challenge and this end date. And it's not the best way to help them be successful in their health journeys. The best way is to give them the tools that they need and the education and the whys and the template without this, you know, dogmatic, you know, rule-based approach. And I know it's sort of like the time of year for people to do these challenges. And I know that there's a lot of people who get this, like this, they get sort of reset by it and it's great for them for the whole year. But if that's not you, if you're listening to this and you're in the middle of a challenge and you know that it's not working for you, it's not working for your mental health, it's not actually something that's going to be sustainable for you, there's another path, and there's, other members of this community who endorse balance and sustainability and flexibility, and that you are allowed to choose that.
Amen.
I got on a soapbox. I say.
Oh, well, sorry. I was like talking on mute. That's the worst. Yes, I agree. I think for me, I also don't want people who it is working for to feel like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Like, we're talking about, there are so many people who've come to this community because they have done some sort of rule-based challenge for a short period of time, and it's helped reset them the way that Stephanie said. You know, it's like a clean break. And I know for Sarah and myself, we both kind of jumped into paleo 2 feet ourselves, and neither one of us did it necessarily with a specific challenge, but we both approached it like, okay, we're going to give this our all and we're going to do it 100%. And then over time, we learned what we could kind of reintroduce back in and works for our bodies and that sort of thing. And that's really what, you know, I would like to advocate to people. But if you're doing a challenge and it's working for you and it's taking away your sugar cravings, or it's regulating your blood sugar, or it's helping you understand what foods are or aren't healthy because that's something that you're unfamiliar with, and by all means, go for it and do it and have that positive experience. It's just that there hasn't been a lot of talk in the community about this sort of behavior. And, you know, there are plenty of people who are talking about disordered eating, like Stephanie Ruper we've had on the show, and Summer Innanen is doing wonderful things with body positivity and body image. And I just thought it was time for me, especially given how many people are doing a challenge, to kind of open up and be honest about something that Sarah and I have been talking about behind the scenes for a long time. And I kind of didn't want to ruffle feathers, and I didn't want to offend people, and I didn't want to upset, you know, the audience who may be doing a challenge themselves, but that, you know, this idea of finding what works for you, especially Stephanie, that's why I love the context of your book and helping people understand, you know, what's your activity level? When are you working out? And for people who don't work out, like, you're going to have a different nutritional set of rules than someone who is, you know, walking a mile a day versus running 10 miles a day versus lifting heavy things. Like, all of those require different kinds of fuel. And for me, it was just really important to kind of put out there for everyone that it's okay to have these feelings. And the feedback that I've been getting from people since I posted it just yesterday is amazing, in terms of how they were able to recognize their own behaviors and hopefully make improvements. And one of the things that really resonated with me, and I think you guys will understand as bloggers, is that someone said that she started a Whole 30, even though she had done a Whole 30 before and it gave her disordered eating, because she saw that everybody in her Instagram feed was doing a Whole 30 and she felt like it was the right thing to do. And so she just did it. And she was like, the thing that I've learned about this is that I need to think for myself. I was like, yes, I highly encourage thinking for yourself. So, I think the idea of what we're all trying to do, and Sarah, I think someone had mentioned to me on social media as well, like, well, AIP is really restrictive. It was like, AIP is a therapeutic way of eating, and it's not intended to be for a lifetime. There are mechanisms to get yourself off of AIP as soon as you start to heal. Like, it is medicine, you know? And I think that's a different kind of thought process as well, as we talk about kind of challenges and that sort of thing. You know, this is all just to help us get healthier, and that can look very different for different people.
It's one of the reasons why when people ask me how long do I need to do the AIP for, I don't like giving a time frame, because people do these like Whole 30 AIP challenges, right? And it's, I didn't come up with that. That wasn't me. Someone else thought of that. And they'll do this, I'm going to do AIP for 30 days, and they're treating it like a challenge.
And that's what I did. I did a 21-day sugar detox and AIP when I started. And I think that's why it was so hard for me when I started AIP. I remember like crying and having temper tantrums. And I think if I hadn't...
You did them at the same time?
I did. If I hadn't been restricting fruit at the same time that I was trying to restrict all those other foods, I don't think it would have been nearly as difficult. But again, that's because I have disordered eating. And to me, that made like a lot of sense. Like, let's just limit everything. So
yeah. Well, yeah. It's why also, you know, for people, like people go into it and go, well, should I also cut out FODMAP? Should I also cut out other things? And my answer is like, unless you have a diagnosed, you know, sensitivity, if you have a diagnosed histamine sensitivity, if you have diagnosed FODMAP intolerance, the answer is no. Like, you start with this, you know, more inclusive, even though it is still restrictive, you start with a more inclusive autoimmune protocol. And then those are things that you can tinker with later. But yeah, I would never say 21-day sugar detox at the same time as AIP.
All right. Should we get off the soapbox?
Yeah.
Stephanie.
Yes.
What are your favorite foods to fuel before and after working out, and why?
You know, I rarely do a pre-workout simply because I am lucky enough to train at midday. So I usually have breakfast around 8. I train around 12. And then I have like a post-workout / lunch and a dinner. So I don't usually eat like immediately pre-workout, but my breakfast is like, I consider kind of the perfect pre-workout. So I have this thing that I call the 3-2-1 breakfast, which is not trademarked or anything, but it's 3 eggs, 2 pieces of bacon, and 1 pile of veggies. So I try to get some kraut or fermented veggies in there in the morning. And that, you know, that protein and fat keeps me satiated and keeps me going like for hours. So by the time I get to the gym to start lifting, I don't feel like, I feel perfectly fine. I don't feel hungry. I don't feel overly full. And my energy levels are really good. So I guess you could count that as my pre-workout. Post-workout, it can vary, but I try to do lean meat and some carbs. Usually I'll push my carbs to dinner time a little bit. And that's because, okay, I'm a weightlifter, so I'm doing like 3 reps and sitting down. I'm definitely not expending a lot of carbohydrate or using a lot of glycogen in what I do. So I had to caveat that a little bit, like people doing CrossFit and stuff like that. You need to eat your carbs like right after you're done. So sometimes I'll push my carbs to dinner a little bit later, but, plantains, man, I could get down on some plantains pretty much anytime. I think they're my favorite kind of post-workout starchy vegetable.
They are just my favorite starchy vegetable.
Yeah, they're so delicious. Yeah. And yeah, like the meat kind of varies depending on what I have that day. I'm not really super partial to any one thing. And I try to mix it up because I'm not, you know, I can tolerate any kind of meat, and I try to rotate them as much as possible so I don't get stuck in a rut and get bored with it. But then also so that I'm, you know, kind of getting like a broader range of micronutrition. So it just kind of varies. I really like steak, but
who doesn't?
I know, it just kind of varies on what I eat.
Yeah. What are your favorite recipes from the book?
Oh, this is like the 18th time I'm sure. I've been asked this question, and it's so hard to pick just one. So I'm going to give the
I said recipes because I have the same feeling. Like, they're all your babies. You love them all.
Okay, so I really like the Asian marinated flank steak because I think the flavor is super good. It goes well with a lot of different things. And flank steak is just the bomb. If you just like slice it thinly, kind of on the bias, it's super tender. It's really good. So probably that. A lot of people were asking me for dairy-free and like just kind of other forms of protein. Like, they were like, can you make a protein bar that's dairy-free and egg-free? That was the two things, dairy-free and egg-free. So there is a recipe in the book that's dairy-free and egg-free protein bars. And Sarah will be happy to know that it has cricket flour.
Yes! How did I not notice that?
What's your source for that? Because people ask me all the time where to find just plain cricket powder.
I sourced it from a company in Canada called Next Millennium.
Yeah.
So that's the cherry cashew protein bars. So for anyone that really wants a dairy-free, egg-free protein bar, you're welcome.
And my girl crush just got that much bigger.
I gave them to my husband and I was like, what do you think of this? Because he helped me taste test a lot of the food in the book. And he is like not a BSer at all. He's just like, he'll tell me straight up like, this is gross or this tastes really great. So I was like, try these protein bars and tell me what you think. And he was like, can you make more? This is so delicious. And knowing his egg sensitivity and his dairy sensitivity, he was like over the moon excited. He was like, when can you make more of those? Because they're so good. And I said, okay, it's crickets. And he was like, what? No way. Like, you would never know because it just tastes like nuts. It's really good. Yeah. So
I actually make like something like a homemade Lara bar for my kids and I put cricket powder in it. Mm-hmm. And they know and they don't care. So,
yeah. So that was kind of my like tip of the hat to all the people who wanted a dairy-free, egg-free protein bar. There you go. So I really like that one. Gosh, there's so many others. I really like crunchy veggies. Like, I love coleslaw and like crunchy slaw and stuff like that. So there's a recipe in there that's a crunchy slaw with chicken and a mango jalapeno dressing that's super easy to make. And I chowed down on that a bunch of times during the summer when I was making the book. So I really like that one too. But yeah, there's so many that are good. And it's funny because people are like, well, how do you, like, what do you eat? And I'm like, you're holding what I eat. I eat what's in the cookbook. Like, that's how I eat. That's how I cook. And that's why you see the food there that you see is because like that's the way I approach my nutrition and that's the way I eat every day. So you're seeing my heart on a plate.
I'm still really geeking out over the cricket powder.
Cricket powder for the win.
I actually have that page bookmarked now.
So the only other question I have, I'm going to try to wrap it up and then Sarah, I'm sure something that I've forgotten. Can you give kind of the elevator pitch as to why fat after working out isn't the best choice? You specified that you eat lean meat after you work out. Can you touch a little bit on, despite being three ladies who think the world of quality fats, why post-workout that isn't the best idea?
Yeah. So from like a biochemical / physiological perspective, fat slows the emptying of your stomach contents, which is great for feeling satiated and like really feeling full and stuff for like all your other meals. But post-workout, we really want fast digestion and assimilation of the micronutrition that we're eating. So the protein into amino acids, right, to get some muscle protein synthesis going, and the carbohydrates into simple sugars like glucose that are going to replenish the glycogen in our muscle. And it, and like time is of the essence, right? Like we're telling people like eat your post-workout as soon as you can, get it down to you as, you know, as quick as you can. Like, yeah, stop sweating and like panting all over the place, but like get your post-workout as soon as possible after you're done. Cause time is of the essence there. Like we want to start recovery really fast. But if you add a lot of fat into that mix, it slows down the whole process. So take out the coconut milk base of your shakes. Stay away from like globbing a big bunch of butter or ghee onto whatever you're eating, like sweet potato, like skip the butter, skip the ghee, skip the coconut oil, that sort of stuff. And let your body like digest that a little bit faster.
Which was really sad for me when I realized that my plantain chips weren't the best choice.
Because yeah. I think there's like a single tear running down my face.
I know.
Yeah. And I mean, it's all relative, like a little bit of fat's not like, to me, I don't sweat. I'm not going to like shave off if there's like a millimeter of fat on my like chicken breast. I'm like, I'll eat it. But, you know, like especially I see a lot of people doing shakes after they're done working out and there's like a big glob of fat that goes into it. Like I'm going to add a bunch of almond butter or I'm going to add some coconut milk or whatever it is. And, you know, they're going to be working out like the next morning. It's better to skip that stuff and save it till like your next meal.
Sarah, I know you're recovering from the loss right now.
I am so if I had any questions in my head, it just kind of knocked them out. Oh man, there goes like all my plans. All right. Well, Stephanie, I just want to thank you so much for joining us again and for being the awesome nerdy inspiration with super amazing abs that you are. and thank you for having fun with us tonight.
Yeah. I'm always happy to chat with you guys, and hopefully Stacy and I will get to chat a little bit more about training, and I'm excited to hear what's going on with CrossFit with you, Sarah, and like there's so much more to talk about. So
absolutely.
So I guess that means you have to come back.
Oh, darn.
I would love to come back.
Well, I too want to echo what Sarah said. It's always fun chatting with you. I myself have learned a lot about just in general, a lot of things from you. I find you extremely inspirational. So I encourage everyone to follow Stephanie at Stupid Easy Paleo. You can check out her new book, Performance Paleo Cookbook. We'll have links in the show notes. And of course, if you're interested in finding more out about the science and you are exercising, she also has her ebook, The Paleo Athlete, available on her website. And thank you, Stephanie. Hopefully we'll see you soon. We'll talk to you soon. I think you'll be on the Strong Woman Radio podcast too. So people want to listen to more. We'll have you on there in the near future.
Sounds great. Have a good evening.
Thanks.
Yeah. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
All right.
Well, after talking about food for like the last hour and a half, I'm going to go eat because I'm starving.
I'm going to go sleep instead of eat because I want to do both.
I'm going to go squat.
They're not very compatible.
Yes.
I'm going to sleep. Sleep, sleep, sleep.
Well, that covers it, right? Sleep, eat, and train. So
that's it. Between us, we're a day.